Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Last month, in response to the urgent need to expand hospital capacity in New York City, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in the United States, President Trump ordered the deployment of the USNS Comfort to the city. The Comfort, along with her sister ship, the Mercy, are the Department of Defense's two seaborne hospitals, mainly tasked with caring for troops injured during conflict and for humanitarian response. The Comfort is treating COVID-19 patients on board, as well as patients who don't have the virus. The ship has treated more than 120 people since it arrived at the end of last month, and about 50 of those have been discharged. The ship removed about half of its 1,000 beds so it could isolate and treat coronavirus patients. And yesterday, it was announced that the Comfort would begin accepting coronavirus patients from Philadelphia and the surrounding region. Of course, you can't park a retrofitted oil tanker in New York Harbor without some preparation work. And Langen Engineering is the firm that was brought on to help prepare the dock for its arrival and stay in the city. Today, we are very pleased to welcome Dave Gockel. He is Langen's president and CEO. Dave, welcome to the program.
Jeff, it's great to be here today. Appreciate you taking the time to reach out to us and share the great story of the Comfort and perhaps talk about some other essential projects in the healthcare industry as well. But it's just it's a good day to be a civil engineer, and it's great to be able to participate in moving some of these essential healthcare projects along.
Yeah, it's a great story, and I think it goes to show that, you know, when the president makes a decision to send a ship like the Comfort to New York and or to even just do all the work that you need to expand hospital capacity. Of course, New York was the epicenter and still really is for the outbreak in the United States. You just don't start building a hospital. There are a lot of things that have to happen in advance of the actual construction, site preparation, the environmental work. How did you get involved with this? Was there an existing relationship with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers or with the city and state that allowed you to take the lead on preparing for the ship to arrive in the city?
Well, fortunately, the firm, we do quite a bit of work with the Army Corps, with the Port Authority, and with various New York governmental agencies. So when they realized they had to get the Comfort in, it was pretty clear right away that the berthing facility where it needed to come into just didn't have the draft to accommodate the ship. So what do? You dredge, but dredging requires a fair amount of work. It requires, you know, still some emergency permitting. And fortunately, our team, which was led by Jeff Stoicescu and his folks, deployed immediately and sort of ran a parallel operation, one which involved securing the necessary emergency permits to get the work done, and two, to do all the environmental work that's necessary with regard to sampling the sediment and then monitoring the dredge activities to ensure that the sediment is being properly handled and disposed of. And, what happened is, I would say there was probably what would normally be 6 months worth of work happened in about 6 days.
Yeah.
So, we would love to take credit for all that, but it wasn't just our team. It was all parties involved. It was all parties involved. And, you know, you think about the critical nature of this. The last thing in the world you want to have happen is you have that ship come up the Hudson River and have to anchor while it's waiting for a berthing spot.
Yeah.
That just, you know, obviously isn't going to fly. The city of New York, as you pointed out, is still ground zero for this coronavirus outbreak. And the need for hospital beds is so, so tremendous. So it was important that ship get here. And it was important that the berthing facility be prepared to accept it.
It's amazing how much work was done in such a short period of time to get the ship prepared or to get the dock prepared for the ship's arrival. I mean, it really, I don't know, it kind of really puts it in the focus that how quickly you can jump into action and how quickly you can respond to an emergency situation like this. And has the firm ever dealt with anything of this kind of speed and magnitude, an emergency situation like this, to your knowledge?
Well, I would say yes, but oftentimes it's been in response to catastrophic situations that occur relative to hurricanes or whatever. Obviously, Superstorm Sandy.
Yes.
Had a huge impact on the New York area. So, but I would say this: I don't know that it's ever been this feel good so quickly, because so often when we engineers are done doing our work, it's still a matter of time before people see the tangible end result. In this case, to be done with our work and literally a day later to see this Navy ship, hospital ship, the U.S. Comfort, coming up under the Verrazano Bridge, up the Hudson River. It was a national story, and it was real immediate gratification for everybody involved. Yeah,
absolutely, and it was announced, I think yesterday again, that the Comfort was going to start accepting patients from the Philadelphia region. And I know that there are some projects also in the health space that you have going on in that region. The Pavilion at Penn Medicine in Philly. You have also St. Luke's Upper Bucks Hospital in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, which is my hometown neck of the woods up in Bucks County. So patients in those areas will be seen by the Comfort. Those are two good public health examples of what you're doing in kind of the healthcare space. What else are you working on in that area?
Well, let me, you touched on it broadly, but let me touch on it a little bit more specifically. Langen is the engineer of record on Penn Medicine Pavilion, right there in downtown Philadelphia. And it's just been a great project. We're working on that with many people, including LF Driscoll. And they just this past week delivered 60 emergency department rooms and 60 inpatient rooms in under 2 weeks.
Wow.
To accommodate COVID-19 patients. So that it's an enormous project, and it was just tremendous to see everybody on that team. And this is an IPD team. In fact, this is the largest IPD project in the United States right now.
Really?
But to see, 120 rooms delivered in an accelerated period was just a tremendous feel good. In fact, a lot of people are probably not even aware of it yet. That story just broke a couple of days ago. And, it's a big, big boost to the healthcare capacity in the city of Philadelphia. Obviously, everything's brand spanking new.
Yeah.
So that's been a great story. Langen does have a presence in Philadelphia as well. And we've been involved in that project for a couple of years now, since it was concepted a few years back. Mm-hmm. And that's just been a great feel good as well.
Yeah.
And you'll probably see more about it in the headlines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially that's the one of the areas of the country that the focus is on, that BWI, or the Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia kind of corridor. Not so sure that we've completely crested the curve yet in that area. So expanding hospital capacity for Philadelphia is important to start, emerging out of this crisis. Being that this is an emerging crisis and something that we really haven't had to deal with at this magnitude, really in our lifetimes, how has Langen, or in your perspective as a firm leader, how have you kind of adapted to the massive changes that we've had to live with, the shutting down, the work from home, the kind of a change to a virtual work environment? How has that impacted the work that your firm does, and how have you kind of led that charge from the CEO position?
Yeah, well, fortunately, it's come off without much of a hitch at all, and we're very, very lucky. But I will tell you a quick story In a sense, we had addressed this, I think, earlier than a lot of other firms had to address it, just in a sense by a stroke of luck. But we have an enormous conference every March, the first or second week in March, and we typically do it in the Northeast where most of our employees are. But we've got 30 offices throughout the country and a couple others throughout the world. And this is our 50th anniversary. 2020 is our 50th year in business. And we said, well, this year for our March conference, we are going to have a big blowout party. We're going to make it a big deal. We're going to do it down in Disney in Orlando. And it was scheduled to take place beginning on March 5th with a shareholders dinner, a big shareholders meeting on the following day on Friday, and then a big social with over 400, close to 450 project managers from all over the country flying in. And then the idea about it was, you know, big celebration. People could bring their families and you know, had a vacation onto the conference either before or after. Most people were doing it afterwards. And on March 3rd, I gathered my executive committee and I said, you know, this just doesn't look good. I'm not sure we ought to be doing this. And some people thought I would say, what are you crazy with? Get on an airplane here. And at that point, it was really only at the assisted living facility in Washington State and this hot spot in Westchester County. And it really hadn't, you know, developed to this proportion yet. But I was concerned about all those people being on airplanes and all those employees whose families might be running around Disney World, which I think, you know, is probably not where you want to be with something like this looming. And the executive committee talked for about 2 hours and we decided to pull the plug on it. Yeah. You know, it probably cost us close to $1 million because it's tough to get your money back in these situations. We just announced it literally 2 days before people were going to get on an airplane. We pulled the plug on it. And at the time, some thought we were being probably a little too cautious. However, I then watched what happened in Boston with this Biogen conference. Mm-hmm. And as I watched and how many people came down with COVID-19 as a result of being there, I felt good, and I think the executives felt real good that we had hit the pause button and pulled the plug on the Orlando party. Yeah. I go back. We were going to have a big party for our 40th, and that was a great recession. So I guess we're going to start celebrating odd years.
Odd years, yeah.
But what that did, Jeff, is it forced us to get focused on the issue very early on. We had an internal coronavirus task force back in February that was monitoring everybody's travel and putting restrictions on travel. In early March, we created a business continuity task force, a keep in touch task force to make sure people were still staying in touch with clients, because obviously the face-to-face interaction was going to fade away. And we even created a recession readiness task force because our viewpoint was there's no way you're going to get through this without some depth of a recession. And we were pretty well prepared. We had ordered 500 monitors. So not only would people have their laptops, but they would have their monitors. And we just drop shipped them from a warehouse in Chicago to get them to people's homes. Fortunately, we have a lot of people who work in the field, and many of the construction projects, you know, are essential projects. So a lot of those projects continued.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. I think we were able to handle the change from working in the office to working from home relatively seamlessly. And the business seems to be going well. We're delivering for clients. But I want to just talk about something that I think all leaders are struggling with and they have to address. And that is what I call, you know, the sense of community. Your workplace provides a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a real important social component in people's lives that too many of us took for granted. And now that we have people isolated, working in their homes, it's how do you bring that sense of community to them in their homes? And we've been we've been trying really, really hard to do that. And I think that, you know, no matter what your effort is, every company's got to step it up. You know, and some of it's fun stuff. I mean, we had a whole group of people who did a bring your dog to work day, you know.
Yeah.
They all posted photos of their dogs hanging out with them at their home office. We got another group that's running a guess whose home office this is.
Yeah.
You know, and they do like one week. And we've got a guy in our New York office who's a CrossFit trainer. Now he's doing workout classes every Wednesday night for the entire company, mm-hmm. and sending out, you know, workout fitness programs you can do on your own. So we just keep thinking of ways to have some fun with it and to bring that sense of community to our people. I mean, obviously I've had three firm-wide addresses via WebEx. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing another one this Monday. But it's not just about how you run the business. It's how you bring the culture of the company home to those people who are now somewhat isolated.
Yeah, it's been a learning experience for everyone. I think that, we always hear stories coming in from our member firms, and I think that there's a surprise at the same time. There's a surprise at how easily a lot of the firms have found that the tradition, the transition to remote work has how smooth it's been. But at the same time, I think that it's also that, that sense of mission for the work that's being done, the especially for the clients, and the fact that a lot of the work is still critically important. So it's essential work. It's critical infrastructure work. But then also,
we're pretty fortunate. We have a significant environmental practice, and I know that during the Great Recession, that slowed down a little bit, but all that work has to continue because it's driven by government compliance. Mm-hmm. So, that work just doesn't stop. So that keeps people busy, and that's important stuff. And then we also do a tremendous amount of work in the e-commerce space. And that is actually, obviously going through the roof right now.
Yeah.
But here's a trend that's interesting about e-commerce. We all knew it was on this incredible trajectory. And it was just going to be almost, growing more and more and more. And now you have this artificial spike where everybody's using it, even the people who swore they would never use it. And when we come out of this and this artificial spike goes away, a lot of those users who were never, ever going to use it will have tried it out. And they're going to say, wow, that was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to continue doing this. So I think e-commerce is going to get an artificial blip out of that. And then the other thing that you're going to see with e-commerce is, and my son pointed this out in March when they had all these shortages of toilet paper and masks. My son said, Dad, this is the trouble with just-in-time delivery.
Absolutely.
There's no inventory. So now we're going to enter a society where government and healthcare demands that there be an inventory. Mm-hmm. So that's going to drive the need for more warehouse space. So this whole e-commerce logistics industry, I think, is going to do well, not just during, but afterwards as well.
I think you're spot on. I think that the years of of developing that just-in-time model of, limiting overhead and not keeping a stock of inventory ready and paying for that for companies to, pay for holding that stock, it's going to shift that whole paradigm back over to a more traditional model where you're going to need the warehouse and you're going to need to have a stockpile of materials, products, so that you can deal with these disruptions to the supply chain. And then the downstream effects of that from a logistics perspective are going to be substantial. And there is an opportunity for the engineering industry to play a key role in helping not only private sector and the public sector end user clients, but also policymakers in Washington and in the state houses to get a better understanding of how these pieces could work together and the role that engineering plays, not just in the design of facilities, but then also the thought process and the advisory position of saying, this is how the systems should interact with each other.
Yeah.
the whole different area of work that could open up. So, I mean, that's one of those things. It's the old saying that, you know, in mid crisis, there's always opportunity. And if we can come out of this with, really just ride this curve down and get, a handle on a therapy or a vaccine and emerge from this, there's going to be people say, well, it's not going to go back to, we're going to have a new normal. Yes, socially, maybe with our interactions, but from a business and economic standpoint, there's going to be a lot of different opportunity out there, especially once things rebound. So it's going to be very interesting. Is there anything else that Langan's working on that, you know, this is great because it gets an opportunity for you to talk about the firm and the work that you're doing. And we have a pretty wide, listenership amongst the industry and then also outside the industry. Is there anything else going on at the firm that you want to make sure people know about?
Well, you know, it's funny. I just want to talk about work at home real quickly because it's an interesting thing what's going on. I knew when we got into this, I said once people get a taste of it, it's going to change forever, and it is going to change forever because people can be more productive. But here's the thing. And I think all leaders of companies have to consider this. Everybody is working at home right now in an artificial environment. This is not the real world. And what do I mean by that? Well, I'm here at home. You know, my kids are grown. They're out of the house. So it's my wife and I. And we don't get interrupted. I'm really able to focus on what's at hand with no interruptions. But this is an artificial environment. If I were normally working at home, there'd be plumbers, painters, electricians, people renovating the house. She might be having her girlfriends over. There'd be all sorts of interruptions. So, you know, in this artificial environment, my productivity is probably higher than it would be. On the other hand, you've got the 40-year-old guy or gal that's got three kids. And those three kids are normally at school and in daycare for a good part of the day. Well, that's not the case. Those kids are at home all day, and those poor parents, and I feel for them, have to balance getting their work done and entertaining and educating their kids. So, you know, any productivity that you try to measure in this environment is almost a joke because this is not normal work at home environment. It's an artificial environment. And I think we all have to be aware of that. And then the next challenge is, you know, we're all talking about, you know, reopening. The governors are talking about it. The president's talking about it. Sports are talking about it. So we're really looking at, you know, how we reintegrate into the workspace. And that is going to be sort of a reverse as far as how people were planning to integrate out of it, where you're going to have lower density employees. You're going to have more people working at home. You know, you may have a squad A, a squad B, and a squad C, and, you know, it might be a 30 of your employees coming to work at once just to maintain the distancing. Until we get a vaccine or something for this, it's not going away. Right now, we're just trying to shave a peak, but it's not going away. We talked earlier about health and safety. I will tell you, we were health and safety zealots, particularly hygiene zealots when this started. I probably sounded like people's moms the way I was talking to them. We were incredibly proactive about hand washing, wipes, sanitizing, high touch surfaces, providing our field staff with masks, with Purell, really, really raised the level of health and safety. And I think it went a long way. To date, we have 1,200 employees, and we only have one confirmed case of COVID. We've had a few others with symptoms, but it's been, you know, only a handful, only one confirmed. And the one confirmed case, the guy recovered without any issues. Mm-hmm. So the health and safety and the attention to hygiene, you know, really paid off. And of all the stuff I feel good about, I think the thing I feel best about is something we didn't do. we didn't send 400 some odd people and their families down to Disney which would have been the wrong time. Hopefully we get to do it at the right time, but I'm just glad we made a tough decision and pull the plug on that. Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to emphasize, you know, I appreciate this conversation because the story about the hospital ship Comfort was just a tremendous feel good story for us. And I'm just so proud of our staff and everybody who were involved in that.
Absolutely. I mean,
I guess one other comment, mm-hmm. I know you were trying to wrap up.
No.
But this was not my idea. This was an idea of one of my other managing principals. But last Friday, we declared a company-wide holiday. It was a day of reflection mm-hmm. and a day of gratitude to show our gratitude to the healthcare workers in all of our communities. And people did all sorts of different things to help out healthcare workers, to thank them. And it was just people went to food banks and worked at food banks distributing food, but it was a company-wide holiday, and it was just a great feel-good day.
That's great. It is truly an example of the essential value that engineers play to improve and sustain not just a built environment, but you know, really how we live every day. The fact that you were able to work so quickly with your partners at the Fed, you know, both in the Army Corps and the Port Authority to get the Comfort positioned to be able to help patients, not just COVID-19 patients, but then also the patients who also have, you know, other health emergencies that, you know, having that ship there, and, you know, just being able to take on some of that extra excess capacity is critically important.
Yeah. And Jeff, you make a very good point. You know, in all this crisis situation, we tend to forget that there are other people with sicknesses and health issues who need health care, and they need to get it without being exposed to COVID. So, that's an important piece of the puzzle as well.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, I really appreciate you coming on the show. This is a great opportunity to get a little bit more insight into the work that you're doing. And I'm sure you'll be doing more work in this sector in the days and weeks and years ahead. And we welcome you on anytime to talk about it. You always have a place here to talk about what your firm is doing. And it sounds like your firm is doing well and thriving, and that's fantastic to hear. And stay safe. And stay healthy, and hopefully you'll be able to get back down to Disney in an off year, maybe a couple months after they open and figure things out.
You bet. Okay. Jeff, thank you so much. I appreciate you having us on the show here, and you stay safe as well.
Thank you very much. Again, that's Dave Gockel. He is the president and CEO of Langen Engineering. See you next time on Engineering Influence from ACEC.